Hedda Håkestad. She's a PhD fellow at the Center for the Study of Professions here at the Oslo Akershus University College. And in 2016, she started her doctoral work entitled Construction Work from Craft Profession to Precariat, where she focuses on processes of flexibilization, migration, and new employment models, and how this has had a profound impact on the construction industry. Previously worked at FAFO as well. She's not part of the project, so we're very, very pleased that she accepted our invitation to talk about this very important industry. Go on, Hedda.
Thank you very much. And yes, as sort of the outsider here, I'm very honored to be invited. Also congratulations to Afi on your project and the wrapping up on your project. Okay, so I will be talking about hiring, temporary hiring to the construction industry in Norway. And regarding that, it's two sort of instances of institutional change which is of importance. One is, of course, the lifting of the restrictions on temporary hiring in 2000. And another one is, of course, the enlargement of the EU in 2004 and 2007. So migration is also a key factor here because it really sort of catered the staffing industry with people that were willing and able to work on the type of conditions that temporary staffing agency offer. And before 2004, it was really not so many Norwegians wanting to accept those kind of conditions. So first, I'm just going to show you two graphs on migration to the Norwegian construction industry. And this, because I will focus on Oslo in my presentation, this is a graph from Oslo, and it's based on registry data, meaning population data. So as you can see over there, in 2003, 9 out of 10 construction workers, this is within the manual trades, in the construction industry, were Norwegians. And even though Norway had been a part of the EEA's common market, the EU common market, for 10 years already, it was really not so many workers finding their way up to the cold and sort of distant north. But as you can see, as when we reach 2014, it's only 53.6% of the workforce in construction that is Norwegian-born, while workers from Eastern and Central Europe make up more than one-third. And, of course, it's big regional differences here. So this is Oslo, but it's also differences within trades, different trades. And the most pronounced differences is, of course, between the closed trades, which require a trade certificate, and the open ones. So I'm just going to show you, just to show you that it's big differences. You can here see the case of masonry, where in 2014 it's only 19% within masonry that is Norwegian-born. However, these figures does not include staffing agency workers, because they don't have an occupational code, which is in its own right sort of an important and interesting aspect about temporary workers that I will come back to. Okay, but this, of course, raises important questions. One, of course, or a set of questions, is, of course, regarding what kind of conditions the foreign workers is offered, and so on. And at least FAFO and also many others have done extensive work on that. My primary interest is sort of, is this additional workforce, does it come just in addition to, on top of existing employment, or is it more kind of an instead of story? Is it, are we witnessing what the economist will call a replacement effect? And what is the consequences for wage and skill formation? And does it sort of spark or initiate a kind of degradation of craft work as sort of structural positions in the labor market? Because craft work in Norway has been skilled, it has been relatively high wage positions, and it has been offered, and and offering good and sort of secure employment. And as of course, this has not been the case all over the world. So in the Anglo-Saxon countries, for example, this type of work has been subjected to a kind of classical de-skilling for many decades. So craft work will be more likely to be associated with de-skilled and low-wage work. And of course, with these pictures from recent political things happening both in the UK with Brexit and with in the US, it's of course sort of raising the question, could something similar happen here? Now, my approach to these questions is kind of a from below perspective. I'm talking about how it affects work organization at sort of from a firm perspective. And of course, they can also be studied from sort of above in respect to aggregated wage patterns and also at an institutional level when it comes to wage regulations and so on. Okay, so my material for the things that the data I will present is from a huge field work that I did with my now supervisor at FAFO, Jon Horgen Friberg. And we were doing field work at construction sites operated by these firms that you see here. Now, these firms, their position in the construction market in Norway has been like they form a kind of the backbone of the industry. So they have been like the serious core in the industry where they have sort of appreciated manual skills. Union rates at average is about 40%. It's more or less 100% in these firms. And they have been sort of taking their fair share of collective skill formation by taking on apprentices and so on. So when we went into the industry, we were thinking, okay, so if social dumping and degradation of work can happen here, it can sort of happen everywhere. So it's the least likely case selection logic, and that's where Frank Sinatra comes in. So it's the kind of, you know, the New York song, if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. So that's the kind of the logic. If it can happen in these firms, it can happen anywhere. So temporary staffing via temporary staffing agencies is, of course, only one form of flexible employment in the construction industry. Now, this so if you see here, the subcontracting or competitive subcontracting, as it's sometimes called, is one dominant form of flexible staffing in the construction industry, and the temporary hiring is another one, and those two, I guess, is the most dominant ones. And for present, this flexible subcontracting is probably the biggest phenomenon. However, I will try to focus on temporary staffing. So it was mentioned before that researchers tend to rely on the statistics from NHO Service, which I also do here. But this graph here is meant to, which is the one above there. As you can see, there has been a raise and a steadily raise in temporary hiring to the construction industry. However, this is probably not very accurate. So the main point here is that is the trend and not really the volume, because the volume is probably much higher than what this statistics include. And on the other hand, you have a sort of a different or a reverse trend when it comes to permanent employment via accord work, which is the dominant type of permanent employment in these contractors. Okay, so let's just see. And these two sort of different ways of, so staffing on one hand and accord work and permanent employment on the other, they sort of designate two very different structural positions in the labor market for craft workers, but they also form different principles of organizing production. So let's now just have a look at the position of craft workers. So accord work in construction is not to be confused with accord work in manufacture. So accord work in the construction is sort of, it's a productivity-based salary that comes on top on normal hourly base. And in Norway, it's approximately 300 kroners per hour. And accord workers will normally have a permanent employment. They are normally skilled. Sometimes they are skilled formally by going to high school, earning a trade certificate. Some other times they will be formally untrained, but they will have had some sort of infirm practice. So will be, for example, taken into an accord team and having a sort of a practical training for maybe 2 or 3 years. And then after that, they will sort of earn the status of a skilled workers, both in terms of tasks, but also in terms of pay. So, and this is significant in a sense, because having permanent employed craft workers also contributes to a sort of informal skill formation in the industry. And the accord teams have normally been very autonomous. They have, in a way, it's very like classical craft production. They are very much self-governed. If it was up to the accord workers themselves, they could just get a drawing of the whatever they are constructing or putting up at the beginning of the project, and they will simply just do it without too much inference from management. And so their competitive advantage is high productivity and high quality. So what then about the hired workers? So hired workers will very rarely get more than minimum wage, which is 134 kroners for those without experience, and a bit more for those who have been in production for a while. Now, they are offered only a zero-hour contract, and which, of course, is unpersonal, so you have no guarantee for income and work. And even though many foreign workers in Norway are skilled from where they come from, being, for example, Poland, Fafo has conducted surveys implying that a majority of Polish workers in Norway do have some sort of formal training or at least much experience from building industry, they are de facto treated as unskilled all-arounders. So when we talk to them, I forgot to tell you that we've been doing more or less like 70 interviews with more or less 100 people. So this is sort of the material that I'm drawing on here. Okay, so they will tell us that, you know, even though I'm a trained carpenter, I will come to a building site and one day I can be used as a mason, one day as a scaffolder, and another day a roofer. So there is no really like any appreciation or at least recognition of formal skills. Now, of course, so this in a way looks strange. So how could these two structural positions coexist on one building site? Because they really do. And wouldn't that be sort of a violation of the principles of equal pay for equal work? I'll come into that later. But in accordance with our accord workers and the whole accord as a production system, it has also formed the traditions for leadership and management. So actually much in line with the founding father of AFI, Einar Thorsrud, was talking about cooperative leadership. Many of those principles has also been prevalent in the construction industry, and is also institutionalized in the trade agreements that management should first and foremost facilitate for production of accord. So it's what they call the syv forutsetninger. So they are to fix everything on the site so the accord team can sort of plow through the production. While management styles, as it appears in our interviews, have changed significantly with the new types of employment. So this is a quote from a project manager saying, "It's a lot easier to direct a bunch of Eastern Europeans and move them around. Just stop whatever you're doing, you're going to build over there. You wouldn't get a Norwegian to do anything like that. He has to complete his work before moving over to where the new task awaits. Eastern Europeans are easier in the sense that they really don't think much about what they're doing, why they're doing a job, and so on." Now, of course, it's a lot of cultural stereotyping going on here. But the most important thing is, and not really if this is if this is true on the part of the hired workers, but in effect, of course, this is not only a consequence of culture, but also on the conditions to which you are doing your work. So when you can get fired on the hour, of course, it's it may do that you sort of just comply. And a hired worker told us this, and he said that this was sort of a typical experience. "I was sent to a large construction site with a high turnover of people. They were firing people left, right, and center and taking on new ones all the time. I was sent there because I knew a little Norwegian. People were always complaining to the staffing agency and people were getting fired. Then the boss arrived. He was a young Norwegian. He treated people like objects and whistling at us like dogs." So that is one thing concerning the management styles. Now, what about the division of labor? So a union representative we talked to came with this quote. "I've been to construction site in Oslo since 1994, and before, until 10-15 years ago, there were normally two Polish people in the corner, and then it was the accord team. Now it's two Norwegian in a corner, and the rest are Poles. In the beginning, they outsourced the simple jobs, but then they have only taken over area by area, and less jobs are left to the accord team." So that really should suggest that it's not only sort of... Also, core tasks is now outsourced to be it hired workers or subcontracting firms. Now, so when it comes to these firms and their employment, you can see this is indicative evidence, and it's from the De Facto report. I did some checking on it. I think they are reliable, but I can't guarantee it. Showing that of these sort of these core firms within the construction industry is only Veidekke, who has actually not reduced their in-house staff of craft workers, which say that it's really a matter of a shrinking core rather than a stable core. Okay, so I think I will skip this because I'm running out of time. But what I've been doing previously with my supervisor, Jon Hagen Friberg, we did an analysis of what is happening on construction sites within these firms, and we were then only emphasizing like changes in firm ideologies and management principles. But I think what we sort of forgot, which is also a very important aspect, is that there is a lot of collective action problems going on. So it's a lot of these firms that has been laying off people recently that has done so rather reluctantly. As a site manager told us, and he was a HR manager, I'm sorry, and he had just been, at the time I did this interview, had just been reducing the in-house staff from 70 to 10. And he said, In Oslo, we currently have no apprentices. In my opinion, that's very bad. So the corporate social responsibility we brag so much about in our company, that's really just cheap talk at the moment. We're peeing our pants to stay warm right now. There's a lot of competence disappearing. But one company alone cannot decide to reverse the trends with respect to apprentices and having their own employees. The authorities must restrict access to hiring or something like that. So within these firms, there is really a sort of idea that they are acting in conflict with their own ideals. And that in order to sustain permanent employment and apprentices and skill development, you have to sort of take some action at the global level, and that individual firms cannot do it by themselves. Now, I just wanted to show you this very briefly, which is high school recruitment to the industry, which also sort of tells the same story, that especially within trades that is open, meaning that they have no requirement for having a trade certificate. The recent tendencies in the labor market has meant a steep decline of young people wanting to work in the building industry, and that is especially then for the masonry, painting, carpentry, and concreting. All right, conclusion. So, is there sort of new craft workers coming from Eastern and Central Europe, hired through staffing agency and other forms of flexible employment? There is sometimes they make up an additional workforce doing qualitatively different tasks from the permanent staff. However, there is also often, and at least what we met when we were out at the building sites, often we can find instances of equal work for unequal pay. And when it comes to consequences for wage and skill formation, the transition from accord work to hired work means a significant decline in wage rates. And it also means because most firms have percentages of the permanent employed staff will be apprentices, for example, 5% or 10%. So when permanent employment is going down, apprentices is also automatically going down. And there has also been a steep decline in high school recruitment in open trades, meaning that a shift from accord to temporary hiring and competitive subcontracting in many ways does mean a degradation of craft works. Now, even though our firms, the firms that we looked into in our study, is of course unique in many senses, because they are sort of examples of best practices within the industry, we do think that it's likely that this conclusion can be extended beyond the firms that we have been interviewing, and that it will go for the whole industry. Thank you.
Thank you very much.